It's 9:30, straight down. If you have a clock with hands on it, it's straight down. And it's time for Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning.
Good morning, Marianne, and I got my apron on.
You have your apron on.
I love that thing Betsy said, how, you know, let's keep the lights on wasn't a good enough motto. We should have a motto that's not good enough.
We and I think that that might be really easy for you and I to come up with. I think we're qualified for that.
Remember, kids have to eat or something like that. I can't think of one off the top of my head this morning.
But we'll work on that.
Yeah, but if you guys see us out and about, you have to, like, think on that and get us a motto that's not good enough.
Maybe we'll embroider it on our aprons.
Oh, yay.
What have you been cooking?
Well, this morning, Cash and Carrie, not this morning, but Cash and Carrie got some shishito peppers in. They said mistake. Yeah.
Oh, by mistake.
Yeah, they said it was just an auto ship. And because I was surprised to see them there, you know, these big bags of shishito peppers. And so I bought a big bag. And then this morning you know how you blister them in the oven usually? But I thought, I'm just going to try it in a fry pan. And I didn't. They turned out really good. I liked them.
Ah.
And then it just skips the step of having to toss them in a bowl with just a tiny bit of oil and try to get a little bit of oil in every crevice.
Yeah.
It worked really good. But they were good. But I also started a little fire. Which is not something I normally do.
But, you know, little is a good word in there.
Yes. So my cooktop is glass. I have an electric stove because I live in a rural enough place that we don't have natural gas out there. And it's a source of great sadness for me. It's a tragedy in my life, which lets you know how good I have it. But I didn't know you could start a fire on a glass cooktop.
Oh.
So what I did was I was making them early because I knew I had to come to the radio station. So it was early in the morning. So my brain was fuzzier than normal. And so I blistered them in a pan. So I got the pan pretty dang hot, put a little bit of oil in there, and then put the peppers in, and I let them just sit, and then flipped them and let them sit, and they turned out real good. So I dumped them into a metal pan that I had sitting there, but I kept the fry pan at the same angle to, like, bring it over to a cool burner and set it down, and the oil dripped out on the hot burner, and it caught on fire. And my poor little dog Otis was so traumatized, he was shaking. And he was so scared of the fire, but he knew that if he was going to escape alive, it would be with me. So he just, like, stuck to my ankle. Poor little guy. Oh, I felt so bad. But anyway, I didn't have any amount of baking soda. And the reason is I sent Dale to the store for baking soda last week because we have a slime mold in our yard, which is a gross thing, and how you kill it is baking soda. So he'd used up all my baking soda. So I sent him to the store for baking soda, and he came back with this thunder pack of baking soda. I mean, it is literally 6.5 pounds of baking soda. And I'm like, sure, I have room for that in my cupboard, you know, because there's this extra half a shelf just bare up there in the kitchen with nothing on it. I'll put it there. Go take this out in the shop. So he had the thunder pack of baking soda out in the shop, which in retrospect was really stupid. So all I could think to do is I just put the fry pan back down on the fire, and that put it out. But
smother.
Yeah, yeah. But still, the dog was very traumatized. The house smelled especially cooked. And the cooktop, I don't know, Dale's looking at it now, but I might have melted a little bit of it. I don't even know if that's possible. I don't think so.
I think it's just either
that the oil, like, turned into a solid.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yay. That was my morning.
How was yours? You weaponized olive oil.
Weaponized olive oil. Who knew it was possible to set a glass cooktop on fire?
Oh, well, I know that because I have a glass cooktop, too. I mean, I haven't had flames, but I have had severely burned smoking pot holders.
Oh, that's, yeah. Well, I solved that with the of gloves. But, when we were living in that farmhouse, when our house got destroyed, that was such a joke because there was, like, once a month that I was, like, you know, going from the stove to the kitchen, you have to go across the doorway, which frames you like screaming and carrying flames, you know, because I was so used to of gloves. You put them on your hand or you put them in the drawer that's right beside the stove. But the pot holders, they're just a free agent. They're just everywhere, you know, and everywhere includes on the stove burner. Durr. I mean, I did it so often.
Yeah.
It's like I'm uncoachable. I mean, just that I can't learn anymore. And I haven't for quite a while.
Or maybe ever in my case,
I think. Yeah, but actual flames, not like smoking, you know, that happens all the time.
Yeah, not like almost flames.
No, but actual flames, and what a surprise, you know.
Oh, God.
A big, like, line of flames.
Woo. Oh, my gosh. Well, so what are you going to do with a big bag of shishito peppers?
Well, I blistered them all up, and I'm just going to eat them. I really like them.
They
I don't know if
so
you guys
good.
Have ever had them out there. They're about the size of a jalapeno, but they're much more delicate. They're not a meaty pepper.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, there's one that's a little spicy, but they're not spicy. And you just chomp on them and you eat everything except the stem. You know, you eat that little inside part and the seeds and you just chomp.
Seeds are really tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're very, very good. And they have a lot more flavor than a bell would have.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A world of difference.
Yeah.
They're just really, really delicious.
They are
delicious.
So good.
So the way that I did them is I just got my pan hot. And then, and pretty hot, almost smoking, and then put some olive oil in there. Not a lot. I would guess I put maybe 2 teaspoons, maybe a tablespoon. And then I just filled the pan up with the peppers and then, moved them around so everybody was a little greasy and then let them sit. And then you can tell it happens pretty fast. I bet within 70 seconds they're blistered on one side. Just flip them over and get them, you know, blistery on the other side. And then I put them in the metal pan, started the fire, put that out, and then put salt on them. And I think salt is really important.
Really important.
Yeah.
And the coarse salt is really nice on
there.
Yeah. Yeah, a little
crunch.
All
you people that cook without salt, you're wrong. I just want you to
know
that.
Well, a lot of people have been told they can't.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're just sad.
I would be sad.
Yeah.
I would be very
too.
Sad. I think that if you can only have one seasoning,
yep, that's the
you
one.
Gotta have salt, pretty much. Yeah. Well, I cooked some
It exciting?
Yeah, it was really exciting.
Just kidding.
I baked some muffins that are a go-to favorite of mine. It's a Ina Garten recipe. I think that hers are called banana crunch muffins or something like that. And I generally do what you and I both do, which is use whatever I have.
Yeah.
So it isn't strictly following the recipe, but the recipe is golden.
It's a papaya, but it has a bunch of A's just like banana.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll work.
I do try to include the banana part, but I made some for the, I cook on behalf of the North Coast Food Web. I cook for the volunteers and staff here during Pledge Drive at the radio station.
Yeah.
And we do that in trade for underwriting for the North Coast Food Web, which benefits two great nonprofits.
It's a win-win.
They get something, but it doesn't cost them any money.
Yeah.
And that's the way it has to happen in the nonprofit world. So we're really grateful at North Coast Food Web, and I'm happy to do that. But I made these little mini muffins. And I got to say, it's one of the most... consistently delicious muffins.
Okay, yeah.
They're really moist. They have mashed bananas and chopped bananas, and you can put banana chips in them too. They have coconut, and I substituted buttermilk because that's what I had, but that's always a good thing in baking. It's fine. But they're really lovely, and I made some chili honey butter. And that was a really good thing with little banana muffin and some chili honey butter.
See, I was at a thing once and you had your chili butter and I didn't try it. And I have to be someplace that you have it again because I want to try it. And I don't even know why I didn't try it. I think it's because I didn't have any bread.
That might be it.
The bread was like later down the buffet and I'm like, no.
We should have put the butter by the bread. I don't know who set that buffet. Probably me.
No.
Anyway, I do honey butter a lot. I like honey butter on cornbread and on a lot of things. But putting a little chili in there and then letting it be for like making it the day before and letting it sit is just really nice with something sweet.
Yeah.
It's a good combo.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like sites on the internet, recipe sites where they have ratings where people rate yes. the recipes and leave comments. They're always really, really helpful. I prefer that so much to blogs where people say, oh, that sounds good, and that means nothing to me. Yeah. Yeah. That's great that it sounds good. Thank you. But All Recipes is a huge site, giant site. It's the Walmart of of recipe sites. It's so giant. And so there's so many recipes on there, and they'll have thousands of reviews, which is really something. And their most popular, most reviewed recipe of all time is a banana muffin recipe.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to check theirs out.
That's the one that I make. But I love Ina Garten. And one thing I love about her, just the integrity, just everything always works. What she says it's going to be, it turns out that way.
Yeah.
And so I'll try that one.
Yeah, it's really good. It also has crunchy granola in it, which thus the banana crunch.
Oh, really?
Which is really nice. It's a lovely okay. addition.
There's that new granola in town that you have to go see the financing guy before you buy it.
Oh, I haven't found that
so
yet.
So delicious.
I'll save up and then I'll go find it.
I'm going to go sell a dog and get some breakfast. But maybe I'll try it with that because that's so good. That's the best granola.
Well, I have made granola many, many times, mm-hmm. but to make really good granola, at least the kind I like, is no cheaper than...
Oh, no, it's so expensive.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, there's that restaurant in New York, and I don't go there very often. Just kidding. 11 Madison Park, and they yeah. have a gift when you leave, and that is granola. And their granola, like to make their granola, it's like $50.
Oh, my gosh.
They have their recipe, but it's just really something. A lot of it is, I think, the dried cherries.
Yeah. But so delicious.
Hey, so I learned a granola thing.
Yes.
Not recently, but it popped up into my brain.
Well, then it's recent.
So it's something that I learned before I quit learning. And that is, you know, I like granola. I like the chunks in there. I don't want it to be like sandy. Do you know uh-huh, what I mean? I like the chunks where it sticks together. And if you like those and you want more of them, when you're baking your granola, you just put another cookie sheet on top of it. And it kind of presses it into those clumps, and it works really good. So you have your granola on a cookie sheet, and you know yeah. how you usually flip it. You just don't do that. You just put another cookie sheet on top of the granola, which is on parchment on another cookie sheet, and put it in the oven and just bake it the whole time. Don't do all the flippinating, and then you get a lot more clumps, and I like it that way.
Oh, that's a really – and easier.
Yeah, you know it is.
Because you don't have to
– more wash up. You got a whole other sheet to wash and the side that you usually don't have to.
We never wash the bottoms.
I know.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, we're pretty seriously into fall now in mm-hmm. terms of what we can find to eat. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I'm starting to see a bigger selection of squash.
Yes.
And the melons and stone fruit have essentially disappeared. Yeah. I know that there's still some out there, but they're not very good.
No, they're not. I was cutting up some cantaloupe this morning because I knew I couldn't set it on fire. And it was just okay, but it wasn't great like yeah. it was 2 weeks
ago. No, and you know, the thing about buying stuff that isn't really peak season anymore is that it costs more and it tastes less.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's you
it's
might
a
as well
lose situation.
Yeah, right. Just don't even bother. Don't even bother. And just in the course of the 1 week pledge drive, the first couple of days of pledge drive, the melon that I brought was perfect. Mm-hmm. And by the end of pledge drive, mm-hmm. the ones that I could find were just not
meh.
Yeah, they just didn't have much flavor.
Yeah.
And I was sorry that I had it, but...
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Thank you, everybody that called in during our show.
Oh, my
Thank
gosh.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
All seven of you.
Well, they did some heavy lifting.
They told their friends.
Yes, they did. And we were very, very, very grateful. And the staff is very grateful, too, although during the half hour of Food Talk on Pledge Drive, they're not... real happy because it's chaos.
Because so many of you call in, and that's really, really great.
It's
and
fabulous.
Our show is only half an hour, so yeah, they pull their hair out a little out there, but it's good for them.
and we bring things that they have to keep track of and make sure that you get. So I don't know about your cookbooks, but I have delivered all of mine.
Okay. Nobody wanted mine. It was a bad idea. I have to get better cookbooks. I mean, you came in with Ina Garten. I came in with...
Oh, well, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this on the air before. But Linda was claiming to need a 12-step program because it was hard for her to part with any of her cookbooks. And if you could see Linda's cookbook collection, you would question why it would be so hard to get rid of a few of them.
I know. It's there's got to be a chapter in that psychology book somewhere about cookbooks because it is one of the things.
They are collectible if you cook, and it's easy to get carried away. But anyway. And I probably would have been the person to call in if I were listening and somebody was giving away a cookbook. Yeah. I would have probably been the person to call in. It is 9:45, so I just want to take a quick sec to remind everyone that Food Talk is a co-production of Coast Community Radio and North Coast Food Web.
Hey, you were talking about fall, and I saw a recipe that I haven't tried yet, and I don't always like talking about that on air because it doesn't really make sense. It's just like those people at All Recipes, this sounds good, thank you. But I saw a recipe just a couple days ago online for pumpkin crisp, and that sounds good. And I've never thought to do that, just to put that crisp topping that you put on apple crisp or you put on strawberry rhubarb crisp, to put it on pumpkin custard. And that sounds really good to me. I mean, just like how you were talking about granola on the banana muffins.
Yeah. And I think, I want to say that I think I've made a pie like that in the past, but it had the crisp topping was ground almond biscotti some nuts. And, you know, that was the base of the crispy topping.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It just looked really good. It made sense. It the crisp topping was thick. It wasn't like when you put the crumble on a French apple pie or whatever it is. But it looked really good. When I make crisp, often I'll put granola in with the crisp mixture, and I like that. I think it just adds another dimension.
Yeah,
to it.
Really good dimension.
And I think that would be good on pumpkin.
So I think it would be great. I think maple goes really well with pumpkin.
You know, there's
so does bourbon. I have a really good bourbon pumpkin pie recipe.
I think I've had it, and it is really good.
It's delicious. I mean, you know.
You made it 1 year for Thanksgiving. It was great.
Yeah, it's good.
So there's all kinds of extracts out there. You know, there's like when you talk about banana muffins, banana extract is, I'm thinking of a word, vile. I mean, it's just strawberry extract, blah. But one extract that I do really like is maple. There's some really, really good maple extracts out there. And I like when you can just add, if I'm going to add maple syrup to something, to get maple flavor, don't you think you have to add a lot? And sometimes you don't want it that sweet.
Yeah, it is really sweet. I think that is the main drawback for certain applications, is that it's just adding too much sweetness.
Yeah. And there's extracts that I really, really like.
There are, I have a very short list of extracts that I really, really like because most of them are chemically made, very much like the flavorings that people have in their espresso drinks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million brands of them, the big tall quart bottles of every kind of flavor in the world, including
imitation
butter,
vanilla,
popcorn.
Get the...
Yeah, right.
Away from me.
Imitation vanilla.
I like lemon extract.
Yes.
And better than lemon extract, I like lemon oil and lime oil.
And orange oil.
Yep. And then I like almond extract. There's a Washington cherry extract that I really like.
Really?
Yes.
A Washington cherry.
That's what it's called, Washington cherry. The other cherry other cherry ones are like, ooh, look, a popsicle. I think it's delicious. I really like it. And I like maple, just certain maples, but I've found maple extracts that I really like. And then
I have a coconut cream pie recipe that one of my complaints about coconut cream pie is it's never coconutty enough, and also it's always too sweet.
Yeah.
And I like this recipe very much, and it has like coconut three ways, but one of the three ways is coconut extract.
I like coconut extract.
And I found that to be really just fine.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But I think that it behooves us to just read the ingredients. Because if you can't pronounce them and you can't recognize anything on there, somebody made it taste like.
Yeah.
And it probably was the people at the Jelly Bean Company because they got it down, you know, for every possible flavor in the world.
Yes.
And I think they just turned some of it into extracts and sell it that way.
I was going into the city, and for my year, I was supposed to buy mango chutney, but in exactly the same spot, there was mangda chutney, and that is chutney made out of these 8-centimeter water bugs from Thailand. I know. And so what a mistake to make, right?
Yes.
But they taste like imitation banana extract.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I don't know why I felt the need to share that. It's one of the biggest mistakes I've accidentally made in my life.
That is like a double disgusting.
I know.
Bugs and artificial banana. Where do we sign?
That's what they taste like. And people are like, yay, my banana tastes in giant bug smushed up into chutney.
Yuck. I do love mango chutney so much.
Yeah.
And I like it on everything. I like it on pork tenderloin. I like it on a turkey sandwich. I like it mixed with cream cheese.
So do you
cheese.
Just buy like, are you talking like the English stuff in a big jar?
Well.
Or are you talking the super, super, super spicy, like the, you know, death melt?
I like the hot chutney, although I got to say, unless you go to an ethnic place, hot chutney is off the grocery shelf is not very hot.
Yeah.
But
no, that's like at Widjamaya, and they have the extra hot.
The extra hot. Mm-hmm. I actually like the taste of that, but it does mask the taste of whatever you're having with it, so it's not really what, you know, it doesn't have a broad use for me.
My guests are screaming.
Yeah. So I just like the a really nice brand of just mango chutney,
okay.
And I try not to buy the big, you know, giant economy jar because it's often too sweet,
yes.
For one thing.
Yes.
And it is small. A small amount of chunks in relation to the amount of...
You're right. There's a lot of slime.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's good, though, for mixing with cream cheese. If you want to have a mango chutney cream cheese to spread on something, that particular thinner kind of, less chunky kind of mango chutney is useful for that.
Boy, there's a lot you can do with cream cheese.
No kidding.
Why don't they have it in other countries? They're all so wrong.
They're so terrible.
There's a lot of wrong people today.
I know, but you know, they make up for it with other kinds of cheese.
Oh, yeah, they sure do.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So you're going to Spain.
Tomorrow.
I know.
Yes, and so manchego, speaking of cheese, manchego and guava paste. That's in my future.
Oh, numb.
I know. I'm pretty excited. I'll be even more excited when I'm actually ready to go because I'm not. I am so not. We've been having pledge drive and a bunch of events at the Food Web, and I've been busy and I haven't done anything about getting ready to go.
I'm sorry.
Well... That's the way it is. I'll stay up all night getting ready to go, and then I'll sleep like a baby all the way.
Okay.
That'll be good. I don't mind missing the plane ride.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to sleep right through that.
Either that or take up needlepoint.
But I do hope when I come back that I will have some food stories.
Oh, you always do. It's so interesting. I've learned so much about Spain culinarily from you. I mean, I just didn't know. I mean, I knew that there was... great restaurants there, but I just didn't know. I didn't know that they had ham and guitar cases.
Oh, yes, I know.
I didn't know.
I know. Well, what we don't know, I mean, that's the whole thing about travel, right?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
you find out how other people do stuff.
Yeah.
And especially in my myopic view of the world, how other people eat and shop and grow their food and make their beverages, and I don't know, I just think that it kind of covers everything. So my narrow screen for picking where I'm going to visit is food and music. And then geography and nice people, bonus.
Yeah.
But not necessary.
Yeah.
Some people are history buffs or genetic. They do genetic research on their family trees and that kind of thing. I have no redeeming social... the reason to go anywhere other than I wonder what they're eating and I wonder what they're dancing to.
So it's not if your ancestors were there, it's just if they put on a good spread.
And frankly, my ancestors were not really adventurous food-wise at all.
You know how you said, well, yeah, and you have a way more adventurous palate than I do. I'm always embarrassed. Anyway, how you said about nice people. So it made me think of something. In the same trip, I went to Japan and Thailand, and they are both culinarily very interesting, right? Different from each other. But the culture in Japan is like, if you make eye contact with somebody, it's considered like bold and almost rude. And then if you smile at someone, it's like a gloating type thing. The culture is very different than ours, and it feels unfriendly, but they are just trying to be polite.
Right.
And then in Thailand, you know, it's polite to smile. They smile so much more than we do, and there's so much eye contact. And so being in two places that were, you know, in Asia, very interesting, culinarily, so much to see and eat and do, but the difference to how you felt being there because of what we perceive as friendly really made a difference. It was really just that one thing, how you said nice people. They're not nice in Japan by any means. It's just that culturally
they go about it differently.
Yeah, it feels unfriendly because of the lack of smiling, the lack of eye contact.
What was one of your favorite things you ate in Japan?
In Japan, just there were these bento boxes that we got all the time it was just like this little mini buffet. And because I don't speak a word of Japanese, I have no idea what I was eating. But the sashimi and just the just little pickled things, and just so often I didn't know what they were, and I'm so sorry.
No, I love obento.
We would go to the store and we're like, we're going to have a sweet, and it would have that red bean paste in it. You know, they're also pretty and decorated, but they're not sweet. I mean, it's just, even when we thought we knew what we were getting, we had no idea. We were just not even in the right part of the food pyramid, you know.
Which is no longer a pyramid.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Now it's a plate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thanks, U.S. Gov. I am crazy about red bean paste. I don't care if it's sweet or not. I love that, and I love mochi with red bean paste in it. I noticed during the young chefs' camps, I was always surprised when we did mochi that the kids all knew, almost all of them knew about it, but they know about it in terms of ice cream.
Yeah, from Costco.
Yeah, or yeah. Fred, you know, yeah. any supermarket yeah. has it. But that's not how I think of it. Mm-hmm. I think of those little buns with sweet paste in them.
Well, and I feel bad because for us it was always a disappointment because we were like, oh, we're getting chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
Because we'd look, you know, look at the thing in the package and not know any of the writing, and then it was red bean paste. And so I just need to, like, I know, change my brain around that red bean paste is not a disappointment.
in Hawaii, where shave ice is, the Hawaiian snow cone, is a big deal. One of the things that you can have is some red bean paste in the
Really?
Yeah, and I always would say, yes, please. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what about Thailand? Because, you know, I've never been to Thailand, so I've never had really authentic food.
Okay. Come on, brain. There was a lot of fish, and because everything was so insanely cheap, our room was $7.50 a night.
I
mean,
my
compared
gosh.
To $960 in Japan, so different. In Japan, like a little clot of white rice with a daikon pickle and a raw egg was $48. And then in Thailand, this 30-inch basket with red fish that were bigger than the basket and lobsters, and it was just like full of every kind of seafood or seafood was $18. It was like the biggest thing on the menu. And so it was just, there were a lot of fish sauce type flavors, fish sauce and lime type flavors. But here we have fish sauce, but there are so many fish sauces.
Yes.
And I have no idea what they were, but they were all delicious.
Oh, man. And I think it's like soy. There's so many kinds of soy sauce, but we generally
stick
with
one. We just think of soy sauce. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. It's pretty amazing. Doesn't it just make you want to travel?
Go out in the world.
Yes. And stay hungry. It does. I wish that we had more opportunity for ethnic cooking classes. Mm-hmm. I would like to be able to go to those. Mm-hmm. You can go to them. You have to leave town to go to them. But
those ones Pat does at the Food Web are great.
They are totally Pat's great. Pantry. So Pat Milliman, yes, from Pat's Pantry, does at the Food Web, does ethnic cooking classes on the last Wednesday of every month. And she does five ethnicities a year and then repeats them one time. So this one coming up is Moroccan. But they're fabulous, and we have been around the world with her because of that. And she always comes with a big old basket of fabulous spices, which is often the secret to the cuisine. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's 10 o'clock, Linda.
No.
I know. I don't know what we can do about it. I think we need to start a petition. I am very pleased to remind everyone that they are listening to Food Talk on the stations of Coast Community Radio, KMUN, Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB, Tillamook, 89.5 FM, streaming at coastradio.org.